myself out.
I am afraid of...
I'm terrified and paralyzed by...
I am deathly afraid of...
Welcome to the Sum of All Fears podcast with your host, me, Ryan Perio. Hello, and welcome to the Sum of All Fears podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Perio. This week, my guest is comedian Cody Swindell. Cody is a comedian who recently got his start here in the Dallas area, but had to move to Austin when his wife got an amazing opportunity for employment down there. And so he is now settling in the Austin area and is starting to do stand-up in the Austin, Texas scene. In this episode, we talk about his move to Austin, his start in comedy, and then we get into his fear of being boring. So let's get into the interview right now with Cody Swindell. All right, my guest this week is comedian Cody Swindell. Cody,
hey, what's up, Ryan?
Yeah, hey, you got your start in Dallas, but now you are moved to Austin with your lovely wife and kind of making your way through the comedy scene. How are you doing today?
Good, man. I'm doing great. It's been nice. I just got moved to Austin and everything, but Yeah, it's been fun.
Okay. How long have you been in Austin now, like officially?
I think it's like 2 months. Okay. Yeah, something like 2 months.
Okay. Well, congratulations on the move and the opportunity your wife has that, I guess, led you to Austin.
Yeah, thanks.
What does your wife do?
She's working in healthcare. She got a new job, kind of customer service. She does a lot of scheduling, administrative work and stuff like that. So she's not like a nurse. She's not working directly with patients.
Okay.
More customer service.
Well, that's awesome. I mean, it's still an awesome opportunity. How did you get your start in stand-up?
Man, it was kind of weird. I wanted to start a while back. It was 2019 was the first time I thought I would have the opportunity to give it a shot. Or I guess, honestly, just kind of got the balls to give it a shot. Mm-hmm. But I I was nervous to do a mic. I signed up for a class at DCC, mm-hmm. and it was Wes Corwin and Hannah Vaughn. They were teaching the class, and it was really cool. I liked it a lot. It wasn't at, they were in between locations, DCC okay. was. Mm-hmm. So it was in the back of a place that a church was using. So we were in like this little Sunday school room. It was kind of a funny setting for a comedy class.
Yeah.
But we were doing that, and I got a new job, and I was working this job, and having kind of a hard time with that. So I ended up feeling like it wasn't the right time for me to try to start doing comedy. I put too much thought into it. Anytime is the right time, but I was beating myself up at the time and not thinking it was the right move at the time and everything. And ended up leaving that job, and we moved to Austin so I could go back to school. And this was 2019.
Yeah.
And so I didn't do that class. I ended up getting on Kill Tony, though. I signed up for that and wrote a awful 1 minute, got roasted a little bit, and ended up making that move shortly after that. So I never ended up hitting mics. 2020 Corona hit and everything. That was right after we got moved back down here for me to go back to school. And once we moved back to Dallas, we moved back. My dad passed away. We moved back to get closer to family and everything. Mm-hmm. And right then I started doing stand up. I was hitting mics and kind of dove in at that point.
Well, congratulations. You obviously, again, you can tell your writing's been calculated because it far out exceeds like the time you've done it. So it's almost like you,
thanks,
because you had that extra time to extra thought process to actually really look at your material before you actually performed. You kind of got a leg up on that part of the comedy journey.
Yeah. A boost I was definitely thankful for. It was kind of like being a whack-a-mole. I kind of stuck my head up for a second to get knocked back down and be like, okay, I need to write more. Like, this is, it's writing. That's what it is.
Yeah. And congrats to you on taking that, taking that leap and, you know, that chance and making it work for you. So what has been like your crown jewel of stand-up so far? Like, what's been like, if comedy were to go away tomorrow, what would be the moment that you look back on?
Yeah, Well, right before we moved, I got to do a Anne Friends show at the Addison Improv. It was Arun Rama, Arun and Friends. Mm-hmm. It was with Paul Smith and Casey Coleman. There's a few buddies on there that it was really cool to be on a show with them and being able to do that room. And if it wasn't sold out, it was pretty full, you know, and being able to do that room close to being a year in comedy, that was exciting. That was really cool.
Yeah, I'm glad that was really cool. That's, you know, it's always interesting to hear what younger people, like, what their milestone in comedy is or their moment, and then, you know, to see the next one that tops it and things like that. So it's always interesting to come across that.
Yeah, yeah, that was definitely a fun one. That was a good one for sure.
So how would you describe your comedy style? Like, if you had to describe your comedy style to somebody to say, hey, what is Cody Swindell's comedy about?
Definitely not high energy. I'm better at saying things I'm not, I guess, I've been trying to describe it myself. I think that's what you're trying to do when you're getting in. You're just trying to describe who you are and trying to find your voice. So I've been kind of nervous to put labels on myself because I don't want to, a lot of my stuff revolves around, like, I only have a few minutes of material right now at this point anyways. So a lot of it has just a few things that tie together. Like, I've been mentioning adolescence, like growing up and stuff, I guess. And a lot of stuff just ties in with being white trash stuff. And I don't want to just go down and label myself as like a blue collar comedy tour comic. You know what I mean? So that's why I'm kind of nervous about throwing labels on early.
Yeah, I wouldn't call you blue collar. But I feel like you're observational. You're very observational comic. A lot of your things are, you realizing something and seeing something and seeing the oddity and what's happening.
That's cool to hear your perspective on it, because it's like I said, you're just trying to find your voice and everything. A lot of stuff now is I don't think I have a joke that's, I definitely don't have a joke that's longer than 2 minutes, but most of my jokes are shorter than a minute. You know, it's hard for me to expand on topics right now.
Yeah.
But you notice, even as I'm writing jokes, now something will pop into my head and I'll be like, well, even though that's not the same topic, it still ties right in with this other thing. So it'll flow well with this other joke. So it's cool to find stuff like that as I'm trying to learn how I write, you know?
Yeah. So what is this picture behind me? Is this a backdrop, or is that like actually on your wall?
Yeah, those were the cardboard cutouts that were hanging in the movie theater from the other guys.
Okay.
It was just, when I was a kid, I was walking through the movie theater and I asked the manager, I was like, what do you do with these? And he was like, if you want them, I'll give them to you tomorrow or whatever, swing by. I was like, all right, cool. He gave them to me just when I walked in. I didn't even see a movie that day.
I applaud your wife for allowing you to have such things in a house with her.
Yeah. This room's like kind of off to the side and everything. So for right now, it was a good space for me to just throw all my random crap that would usually go in a garage.
That's awesome. I just noticed, I was like, is there karate going on behind him? But I was like, I didn't know if that was like one of those green screen things or.
Oh, yeah. 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 Just Will Ferrell and Mark Wahlberg shooting at each other.
So how does your wife think of your comedy? What is she like? Has she come to shows and stuff?
Yeah, she is super supportive, which it kind of just like, I kind of think of it the same way you think of, or I think of family and stuff like that. Like, it's kind of gimmies. Like, they're gonna be fans of you or whatever. They're gonna be supportive for the most part and everything. Mm-hmm. So, but she's definitely on the supportive end of things. Her and her family, like my in-laws, are even very supportive of me doing comedy. But they're a pretty artistic family.
That's cool. So it's cool to have that kind of support. What about your family? Does your family really get behind your stand-up or?
Yeah, they do. I think my family is more, I almost want to say blue collar. Maybe that's not the right thing, but my family is definitely not as open as her family, like artistically and stuff. You know what I mean? They're just more kind of practical seeming, but they're still as hard nosed as my dad was. My dad was like Red Foreman from That 70s Show.
Okay.
But even he was like, I want you to follow your dreams and do stuff. So
is that kind of the impetus? Like whenever, I guess, that the carpe diem on that stuff. When you kind of pass, it's kind of like I've had that happen when I had a death in my family. I'm like, am I doing everything that I want to do? You know, mm-hmm. it kind of makes you kind of introspect on that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, for sure. Yeah. You definitely start to see time a different way for a little while and stuff like that while you're getting adjusted to a new life, you know?
Yeah. So you brought up an interesting fear, which I completely relate to, and I never realized like that could be a fear. Like go ahead and tell the listeners what you're afraid of.
The best way I could put it, what I'm dealing with right now the most, I think, is a fear of being boring. Like I said earlier, I definitely wouldn't describe myself as being a high energy comic. Mm-hmm. And I think that leaves me a little more susceptible to just being too melancholy, too kind of or mellow or whatever, but just too dry. And I think that worries me. Like I also don't want to be trying too hard to have big energy. I'm scared of that. And I've tried that in stand up. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Especially when I'm hosting, I'll try to have bigger energy and it just feels so inauthentic. I feel disappointed and disgusting inside, you know?
Yeah.
So it's hard to find that weird fine line of, just how I want to and how I can come across to people.
Yeah. And did this come from doing stand-up, or has this been something you've had, like, even in relationships? Like, do you feel like you monopolize conversations, like, when you're talking to people and, like, they're not responding or they're waiting for you to say more and you're like, am I just killing these people right now? Because that's...
Yeah, for sure. I think stand-ups put a big magnifying glass on it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But I think it's something that I've noticed in day-to-day life, too, is it's a weird thing doing stand up and having a fear that I'm boring. Like if you think you're boring, why are you doing stand up? But I do think I have something to say, whether I know how to articulate that right now or not. I think that's what the journey of stand up is or whatever. But I think I despise that, or maybe not despise, but I don't like the big energy and I'm never going to fight to win over a room. And I think that's what I like about stand up is I kind of know I have the attention and I know I have the time and the attention to get across what I want to say.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause one of the things is I used to have that when I was an MC is like, I would be on stage and I would be either getting out of my set or doing announcements. And then you can hear the audience start to move in their seats. You can hear, like the attention starts to dissipate from you. And I would start to rush my announcements like, okay, I got to say these things, but these people, I can hear that they're already disinterested. You know, even in your material, you can hear the audience just, you can hear those little sounds and stuff. And you start to panic because it's like, oh my God, am I bombing? Is this happening right now? Is this like how much time? You can't really get a real feeling of time. Like a 2 seconds of silence feels like a minute on stage.
Yeah.
And so I totally get where this is coming from. It's all, and like even in normal conversation, just you feel like you have nothing else to contribute to a conversation. You don't know how to kickstart to the next topic. And you're just both kind of sitting there. Like,
Yeah. I mentioned my first time doing stand up was too early. It was before I started hitting actual mics. It was on Kill Tony, which I think is a bad idea to try for your first time. But I think that happened. He kind of does that interview after you do your minute. And I think he could tell that I was kind of shutting down. He asked me if it was my first time doing stand up. I was like, yeah, that was my first time or whatever. And I think he could tell through his questions and stuff that I wasn't being very responsive partway through. I think the nerves were kind of getting to me and he could sense that. So he brought another dude up on stage to kind of shift gears and end the show in a fun way. But maybe that has heightened my fear of being boring, is starting stand up that way and feeling like, oh shoot, he can see the boredom on my face right now, or see the regret building in my face right now.
Yeah. And the fact that he just like was like, let's move on. Like, it's like,
yeah,
that's always, uncomfortable too. Like I even dating.
It was actually Colt McNeely. Do you? Mm-hmm. He was like doing karate and stuff right before me, and he brought him back up on stage to kick the hat I always wear off my head. So it was pretty fun. I can't deny that. But
did he kick the hat off your head or?
Yeah, he got it. He nailed it.
Because like I would be afraid that he would like that would be the one fail.
Getting the chin.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. I think he got Jeremiah that day too. He kicked something off Jeremiah.
Yeah, I thought he actually kicked Jeremiah. I think he missed. I thought he missed on Jeremiah on one of them anyways.
Oh, he might have, yeah. I was on the one in Plano. He got up in Plano and Fort Worth that weekend.
Okay. I know in one of them that Colt missed, and like it was a blooper reel if he just got popped. I was like, because I think it was a water bottle or something like that. And,
oh, yeah, you're right. He was trying to kick the cap off the water bottle.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
So... How do you try to remedy not being boring? Like what is Cody Swindell's like guide to being the fun guy?
I just embrace it. I laugh because I bought a shirt when I was a teenager that said Mr. Good Times. Mm-hmm. That's the biggest purchase that I've regretted. That oh man, looking back now, like, what a loser, you know. But yeah, just not doing stuff like that, not trying to be Mr. Good Times, just embracing that I'm not going to have that energy and that's cool. And you mm-hmm. still have your audience. Like my favorite comics, some of my favorite comics are like Todd Barry and Hannibal Buress is really one that I point to. And mm-hmm. he has moments on stage where he is big energy and stuff. But I think overall, he's pretty, I don't know what to call him, but I'm drawn to him. I relate to Hannibal a lot. And you don't want to copy anyone's style or anything like that, obviously, yeah. But I look at him as motivation.
True. And as you do more of it, you'll find your own style. Like it's yeah. a lot of it when you start early on is emulation and things like that. And then you just kind of find who you are in that whole process. And so sometimes you are close to what Hannibal does. Other times you might find yourself being, you know, completely opposite of Hannibal Buress.
Yeah.
It's one of those things where you gravitate to people and see how they found success with a similar style. And you dive into that first and then find out who you are in the aftermath.
Yeah. Yeah. I hear that a lot through, and I'm always trying to consume podcasts and stuff like that. And that's what I hear a lot. Like I think most recently I heard when I was listening to Pete Holmes saying something similar, that you're going to copy somebody when you're early on, you just kind of fit their cadence or their rhythm or whatever. And you're following that kind of down that track.
Yeah.
Were there any comics that you saw yourself emulating early, and has your style changed off that a lot?
I would say so. Like I started out emulating, I would say Dave Attell was the,
yeah,
and it just didn't fit who I was. I'm not a up all night going out finding weird shit kind of guy. And so I would watch Carl LeBove is one that I really point to as somebody I watched live, because when you start doing stand up and you actually see real shows, you find these other people that have been doing it that are, you know, that maybe, you know, aren't as famous as the guys on Netflix, but you watch them and you're like, wow, that was Carl LeBove. And I would also say Kyle Kinane probably is the other one.
Yeah.
Cause I love Kyle Kinane's emotional honesty, but I love Carl LeBove's attitude and performance. And so that would probably be the amalgamation of what I bring to the stage when I go on stage, is that I have the emotional honesty of Kyle Kinane, but I also have more energy than Kyle.
Right, right.
Because I just have a lot of angst and things like that.
I haven't seen Carl LeBove, but I've seen a lot of Kyle Kinane. I heard him recently talking about coming up in Chicago. Mm-hmm. And apparently that's where Hannibal came up as well. He said when he went back to Chicago, he came up a few years before Hannibal. And when mm-hmm. he came back, everybody was talking Hannibal up. And he was like, man, really? Like Hannibal turned it around that quick? And it's cool hearing about stuff like that. And I've been able to see some stuff like that already just being around a year. Mm-hmm. Is those guys that you think one thing, but then you go see them another time and they really turn it around. I guess I'm talking about a different thing, but you see some people out at mics and then you go see them at a show and they really blow you away. And that's a really cool thing to experience.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And how I was going to ask you in comedy, what do you feel like the difference in comedy is between Austin and Dallas? Like, since you've done both.
I used to try to summarize it in different ways. I thought that I forget what podcast I heard it on, but somebody described Austin as a summer camp for open micers. Mm-hmm. And I thought that seems fitting. I don't know the scene well enough, but it does seem pretty wild. Like, there's a ton of open mics. They're at cool venues. Dallas has more. It seemed like Dallas has more clubs, so there are more professional type shows.
Yes.
But there are a ton of shows down here. There are shows down here every day of the week, it seems like, and shows and open mics.
That's awesome.
And in Dallas, it's you can't find a mic on weekends typically. Mm-hmm. And then, but the shows are typically for the weekend. It's a better separation or a more distinguished separation in Dallas, it seems like. You can get time any day of the week down here, and the shows are, I don't know if they're harder or easier to get on, but it seems like there's more shows.
Mm-hmm. Have you gotten on any shows down there?
No, not yet. But as consistent as I was in Dallas, I haven't been as consistent since I moved. I have the excuse of it being a rough move, but it's really been a time for me to have to sit back, because we had so much going on while we were getting down here that I wasn't writing as much as I was hitting mics. Mm-hmm. I was really proud of myself for how often I got to a stage my first year in Dallas, knowing everything I heard, that it's just going to take time to find your voice and you got to get on stage to find your voice. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted that to be my thing, but I know I need more balance. I need to dedicate more time to putting a pen to paper. Mm-hmm. And I've heard a lot of people say they write on stage. That's not how everybody gets it done, but I know that's how I've come up with stuff that I feel most comfortable doing on stage, is actually putting that pen to paper.
Yeah.
So I know I need to dedicate that time to it, make a better balance of it.
Yeah. And it'll come. It's one of those things where sometimes you don't have any more life experience you could write about. Like, you just kind of almost reach almost a dead end to say. It's just hard to, sometimes you'll have to have something happen to open new avenues of conversation and ideas, because you start writing one way and it's like you reach the dead end of that and you're like, you know, I don't know what else I can talk about. You know, certain things after you talk about stuff with people and have conversations, it's like other things just all of a sudden start to pop up.
Right.
So how many open mics have you hit, like, in Austin? Do you just like one or two?
Nah, a few a week, but just, I was hitting a few a day in Dallas.
Yeah.
But there's a couple that are actually close to me here. Mm-hmm. There's a couple right down the road. So one day out of the week, I don't have to travel too far, and that's pretty nice.
Yeah.
In Dallas, you usually got to drive an hour if you want to maximize your night out, because you got to go to Fort Worth and Dallas. But it's definitely cool down here.
And so is your wife more fun? Do you feel like your wife is a more fun conversation? So if y'all like have a cut party or something, do you feel like she's more the fun one than you? Do you ever?
Probably not. I think we're both introverted homebodies typically, mm-hmm. you know, not big crowd seekers, you know?
Okay. Do you feel that plays a role in the fact that you think you're boring? Is that boring, the fact that you don't like try to go out, that you feel like?
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. Is deep down, I know I kind of like being boring. I kind of like, I like the comfort, you know what I mean? Like, I don't want to have to come outside of my comfort zone, even when I'm out, like even when I'm walking through. And it's hard at mics. Like I've said before, I feel like I walk in to mic still. I'm still very nervous every time I go up, no matter if there's nobody in the audience at the mic or what. But I walk in everywhere, it feels like I got my shoulders above my head and stuff. And it's hard to break out of that, because I want to do a good job at that mic so much. Like, I don't want those hours waiting to be wasted at the time I get on stage. But right now, I think I'm focusing on something you've said, and it's just having fun. And I didn't know exactly what that meant when you said it. And I think it's sinking in a little bit more, and I'm wanting to be less robotic. Like, I'm dying to get off my material that I've been sitting on and just be able to have a little bit of fun, be loose, not say everything the exact same way I said it the time before, mm-hmm. be able to risk things and, yeah, just be a little less systematic with stand-up, you know?
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you doing this, man. This is a really cool conversation. Like, I enjoy the fact that that this is a fear that is so relatable, because people don't realize how ridiculous, you know, it's one of those fears that people don't realize they have until they start thinking about it. And it's like,
yeah,
like, I'm terrified of it. Like, I've messed up so many times with dating and things like that just because of that, like, my fear of being boring. Like, you know, I don't know how to deviate and to do something unexpected and different to be fun.
Yeah.
But yeah, I really enjoyed this conversation. Where can people find you on social media?
Instagram, Swindell, SWINDE11. Mm-hmm. L's are ones. That's pretty much it right now. I'm not on Twitter. Okay. I got Facebook, that's just keeping up with shows.
Are you coming back to town anytime soon, or is Austin kind of just gonna kick it in Austin for a while?
Yeah, I am on June 11th. I'm at DCC for Pardon My French, Reggie French's clean show. And then June 26th, I think, whatever that Wednesday is, mm-hmm. I'm at Twilight doing that feature spot for Mana. That's going to be pretty cool. That's always a fun mic. And July 2nd at MacGyver's in Fort Worth. That's
awesome.
Going to be cool. July 30th at a Jarhead competition in Fort Worth.
Awesome.
I got some stuff to come back and visit y'all for, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And I keep pounding in Austin. That seems like you just gotta, you know, once they see you enough, they'll probably put you on shows, and the rest of those weekends will fill up with Austin dates. And so
yeah, I hope so.
have you made a conscious effort to writing clean? Is that something you've like made a conscious effort to do, or is that just something that came naturally?
I did for a time, but like I said, it's only been a little over a year for me, but at first I wasn't worried about it. And then a few months in, I was like, I noticed most of my material was clean. Mm-hmm. So I tried to stay clean, because that was a lot of advice that I was getting. And I still believe in that. But right now I'm open to writing anything. I don't try to steer anything one way or the other. I'm just trying to get out ideas, because like I said, I'm focused on trying to just have fun and find my voice. I want to loosen mm-hmm. up. I want to be a little less worried about what people think. I think part of that is me worrying. Not only do I not want to be boring, I don't want to come across like an asshole either. So it's tough trying to, I don't want to rock the boat, but also don't want to be too shy to rock the boat. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And it comes in time. Like it's cool that you found that part of your material that early, because I think if you learn to write clean, it's easier to be not clean than it is to be dirty and then try to write clean.
Yeah.
And so the fact that
Backdoor has been huge for that. Backdoor, that's why I'm glad somebody put me onto Backdoor soon after I started. That was a big boost. Having a clean club to go to have to dedicate a clean set every week, that does help. I think more than just that muscle of writing clean, but it helps you write specifically, no matter what the thing is, you know?
Yeah. But yeah, that's awesome. I can't wait to see you. I'll look forward to talking with you when you come back to town in June. Until then, I'll let you get back to moving in Austin and having some shit. You have open mics tonight. You got an open mic you're heading to now, like are about to?
Yeah, in a little bit, going to head out. There's a couple tonight out in Austin, one at Sand Jack Saloon and one at Creek in the Cave. I'm going to try to hit.
All right. Well, good luck. Have some great sets.
Yeah. Thanks, man. Thanks for having me on, Ryan. I appreciate it.
So that was Cody. That was a fun conversation. I wish Cody the best of luck in Austin. Can't wait to see him when he comes back to town. He's an amazingly cool person, and he just really,
really is intentional with his joke writing and all of his material. He's very observational and keen observation. So if you're in the Austin area and you or see him on the show, check him out. He's a really good comic. I appreciate him for coming on the show and talking about being boring. That's such an interesting fear to have and something that we all kind of get nervous about, I feel like. We all kind of feel like, are we ruining a conversation? I do that all the time. I am terrified of being boring or just basically not having anything to say. So check out Cody Swindell on social media. I have his links in the show notes. As for me, I won the Funniest Comic with a Day Job contest. It was a fun time. And then I worked this weekend at Backdoor Comedy. And so I will keep you apprised of any gigs that come up. I hope to have some more soon. And I guess I hope you guys have a great week and thank you for listening to the Sum of All Fears podcast. If you like what you hear, leave a review. And now some thank yous for the folks that make this show possible. Thanks to Barry Whitewater for my art and graphics. You can follow him on Instagram at bwhite H2O. Get it? H2O, like water. You can also follow him on Facebook. Music. A huge thank you to Gunnar Olson for the wonderful music provided for this podcast. You can follow him on Instagram at gunbuns, that's G-U-N-B-U-N-S, as well as his website, gunnarolson.net. Check out some of the samples that he has recorded. They're amazing. He's an amazing percussionist. If you want to follow the show, we've got a Facebook group, Sum of All Fears. Instagram, Twitter, you can find us at Some Fear Fans. If you have some feedback for the show, email me at somefearfans, somefearfans, at gmail.com. I'll be happy to take those into consideration. Also, if you'd like to be a guest, email me at somefearfans@gmail.com. We can try to iron out some details and get that settled in. Give us some feedback. If on Apple, Google, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts, leave a review. It makes the show bigger, and it's not going anywhere. I'm going to record as many shows as I possibly can. If you want to follow me on social media, I am at Ryan Perrio. It's RyanPerrio on all social media platforms. You can follow me there, and you can check me out at RyanPerrio.com, my website. I'll try to list upcoming shows there as well. It's been kind of spotty because as soon as I set it up, that's when the pandemic happened. And everything's kind of just in a holding pattern. Thanks again for listening to the Sum of All Fears podcast. Next week, we'll have another guest with another fear. Thanks for listening.